Morning, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you. 720 WGN. Roger Badish in the newsroom. Jess Rains behind the glass. Matt Bubala here with you until 5 a.m. We're live in the Allstate Showcase Studio here in the historic Tribune Tower on Michigan Avenue. It's a beautiful night downtown Chicago. Hi, Roger. How are you, buddy?
Well, hello, Mr. Bubala. How are you? I have to say Mr. because you're all dressed up.
I must dress like such a bum.
No.
I know I'm always wearing like a Star Wars t-shirt or a Led Zeppelin t-shirt or a Dr. Pepper t-shirt, maybe a Pac-Man t-shirt sometimes. But tonight we celebrated my mother-in-law's 70th birthday. Her birthday is actually today, Saturday, June 3rd. She's 70 today, but on the Friday night, we went out to dinner at Wildfire in Schaumburg.
Oh, good restaurant.
So good. You know, we used to do... my company, Black Dog, used to video our cub luncheons. So this is about 5 years ago now, I think, or close to it. When Cap was still here, we would carrying the cubs. We'd do these once a month. I forget what it was called. Lunch with a Cub or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And Cap and Brian Noonan would host it with a Cubs player.
Oh, that's right.
And it was at
that's
Wildfire.
When they were doing that sports show. So
yeah.
That, yeah.
They would do that at noon. And that was at Wildfire down here. And afterwards, they always fed us a really good lunch. And so I've always loved that restaurant.
Yeah.
And so we went there tonight with the whole family and had a nice little private room, and it was awesome.
Beautiful. Well, God bless.
So from there, I came down to Black Dog, and I tried to take a nap for an hour and a half.
How'd that work out?
You know, so my company is, you know where the Maggiano's is at Clark and Grand?
Yeah, yeah.
There's a Potbelly's right next door.
Sure.
And then my studios are right above the Potbelly's in that building.
Oh, okay.
But that's kind of a busy area. Like, they're... Three hotels since I've had that studio now for 10 years, and three hotels have opened up in the area since then. Bars, there's a fire department a block away, so it's tens on a Friday night at 1 a.m. to be a little loud. So it's tough to get much of a nap, but whenever I nap before the show, like at home, if I get to bed at 8 or 9, I can take a real nap. If I start going to bed closer to 10, I wake up not knowing if I ever fell asleep. You ever do that?
Yeah.
Where like you're aware that you're falling asleep, you're going to sleep, and suddenly the alarm goes off, and you're like, wow, I never did fall asleep. And then somebody's like, well, you were snoring pretty damn loud for never having fallen asleep. Like, I was? So I think I fell asleep for an hour and a half, but I have no idea what happened.
Yeah, and I think that's the Maggiano's that they either still do or used
to. City Club of Chicago.
City Club of Chicago,
yep. All the time they'll be... there'll be the vans, all the news vans out there if they got somebody good.
Because my daughter used to be the executive director of the City Club of Chicago quite a number of years ago. So that's why I remember that area.
And our old friend Paul Green put a lot of those together.
Good old Paul.
Actually, Jim, my business partner, and I were, you remember about a year ago now, maybe close to it, President Donald Trump was coming to Chicago for an appearance.
Oh.
And he was going to speak at the City Club. And it was there. And I remember we were down at work and we're walking by and we realized, oh, yeah, Trump's down here. And there's a big protest on Grand Avenue right there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're shutting down the street. There's like 40, 50 people. Yeah. This is before he really was drawing the insane crowds of protesters or pro-Trumpers. Mm-hmm. And their van pulled up in the back of the alley. There's an alley between our two buildings. And so we set up cameras in a back window thinking, hey, maybe we're going to get a little shot of him coming out. We'll get this to the news stations, whatever.
Right.
It was a decoy van. He never came
out. Oh, no.
Never came out that side. Yeah, it was crazy. Ah, well, what are you going to do?
Yeah, what are you going to do? Yeah. Other than that, how's everything going?
Everything is good. So
we only see each other once a week.
I know. Well, what do you want me to do? You want me to knock off Justin Kaufman? What should we do? Who should we take out? What do we need to do?
No, let's get together during the week. I know you're a busy man, and I'm not busy.
Oh. Yeah, it's kind of tough for me to figure out. I can't stay down here during the week because, you know, got to get on. It's a very busy baseball time of year, Rod.
I know.
So last weekend after the show, I was headed back home, and then we headed up to Dubuque, Iowa for a baseball tournament for Michael and Tommy's team, the 11U team. And that was, I'm going to tell you a baseball story. I try not to do this because I know it drives people crazy sometimes. But something, so a couple of really interesting things happened. So it's a Field of Dreams tournament. And so the Field of Dreams, so you enter one of these tournaments. You play in these tournaments in Dubuque at the Dubuque Sports Complex. And then you have a night where you go to the actual Field of Dreams, which is still intact.
Mm-hmm.
And was bought by an investment group based out of Chicago. And Denise Stillman is one of the owners, and she's a PR person. She was a PR person from Chicago. I know her from interviews I did for my Good Parenting radio show. So I got to go say hi to her and talk to her and see how it's going. And they're building. They're trying to build. They're in the process of building a massive complex up there of like 21 baseball fields. and residency. So Cooperstown, New York has one of these that it's a big deal for baseball teams to go to Cooperstown, New York for a tournament. Uh-huh. That's like a week-long tournament. We're supposed to do this next year. And what happens is the coaches and the kids stay like in army barracks. And then the parents rent houses or stay in hotels. Mm. And the kids are like together all week, mm-hmm. playing in games every day. You play in like 8 or 10 games, I think, throughout the week. It's like an insane, intense tournament. They're trying to sort of replicate that out in Dubuque. And they're buying up farmland and trying to do it, so it's in the process. But they're
not going to mess with the Field of Dreams.
The field is intact, and it's staying intact. And I could bring you, I don't know if I have the card with me or at home. I'll show it to you next week.
Okay.
They have like a printout of here's what the plan is and here's what's being done.
Oh, okay.
The Field of Dreams would stay intact. The bad thing about going to this tournament, going to see the Field of Dreams in May,
mm-hmm.
do you know what that would be, Raj? I think I probably told you this last year.
Mosquitoes.
Lack of corn. When you get to the Field of Dreams, what you want to see is an outfield full of corn.
Yeah, it hasn't grown yet.
No.
Yeah.
Nothing
at all.
It's kind
of flat.
Big, flat, empty corn row land. And you're like, oh, well, there's no ghosts coming out of that.
Well, were they all trying to, like, still hide, like, kneeling down?
No.
Thinking they were hiding behind?
So what you're supposed to have is a night there where your team takes part in a skills competition.
Okay.
And there's a bunch of, like, a home run derby and a, like, relay throwing contest, a running contest. The night we were scheduled, our team and a bunch of other teams to go there, it poured rain.
Oh,
so it got canceled. Geez. So the next day before a game, we just drove out there as a team. It was Sunday. So we were there Saturday, Sunday, Monday. On the Sunday, we drove out there as a team, and it was the middle of the day on Sunday. Nobody's out there. We walked around. We played catch. Our coach hit ground balls and fly balls to the kids on the actual field. It was awesome. Mm-hmm. They let you do whatever you want.
That's
great. It's really wonderful. And then we went and played our games. Our first game of the tournament, I think it was, or maybe it was our second game, it was against a pretty good team. They got a kid out there throwing hard.
Mm.
Good thrower. But I'll tell you what, Roger, the kids at the top of the order of this team are killing the ball right now. Our team puts 4 runs on them.
Wow.
There's, I think, 2 guys on base. Next kid comes up to bat. And one of the bats we've been using, you know, in travel baseball, you can use what's called big barrel bats. And in Little League, you can only use these Little League bats that are only 2 1/4 inches in diameter of the barrel.
Okay.
And I think it's 2 5/8 for travel, so they're bigger. Kid comes up. We're up 4-0. And we got guys on. We only got one out. Their coach comes out of the dugout, talks to the umpire. That's an illegal bat. They can't use that bat.
Oh, no.
And so I was first base coach, so I walk over. I'm like, well, what's going on? He's like, that bat's been deemed illegal. And there was this recall of DeMarini is one of the big bat companies.
Mm-hmm.
There was a recall of bats. We had heard about it earlier this year. I didn't know much about it. And apparently this bat was one of them involved in the recall. He pulls it up on his phone.
Right.
And he's like, here, see, it's right here. USSSA, recall these, blah, 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 blah. He's out. And so their coach calls our kid out. And
right,
I'm like,
the coach doesn't call.
Well, that's what he does. And I said, hold on a minute. How about we let the umpire make some decisions here, shall we? So the umpire's looking at him. He's like, I don't know anything about a recall. And our head coach is like, there's nothing in the rules about anything like this. So we would have been okay if it's like, hey, we can't use that bat. We said, fine. But he's trying to call the kid out who just stepped into the box.
Right.
So I'm like, we're not doing that. So we call the tournament director. Tournament director has to say, we have a 20-minute delay in our game.
Oh, no.
Tournament director rules, we don't go by USSSA rules. It's a hybrid of rules, and so the bat gets to stay. So we come back, and the bat stays. This coach is interesting throughout the game. It's a Quad Cities team. At one point, he gets so mad at an outfielder, he yanks him off the field after a play. They play the next batter with 8 players, 2 outfielders.
What is wrong with this guy?
And then he sends the kid back out there, and the umpire was getting ticked off. The umpire, you know, they're like, it's not a hockey game. We don't just switch on the fly here.
Right.
So we had some interesting moments with this coach. So now, here's in travel tournaments, they're trying to fit a million games in a day, right?
Sure.
So often, there's a time limit on the games.
Okay, I've
and
heard
it might
of that.
Be 80 minutes, 90 minutes. Usually it's no new inning starts after the time is up, things like that. Well, at this Dubuque Sports Complex, the only place I've ever seen it, maybe other places have it, but I haven't seen it, on the scoreboards, there's an actual timer. And so when the first pitch starts, 90 minutes, it starts counting backwards. And
sure.
We paused it during our various problems during the game, but it counts down. We get, it's the bottom of the 5th inning. They're the home team, I think. Bottom of the 5th inning, they're down by 5 runs. They have a runner on second base and one out, and we're down to less than a minute left. Now, our coach could have been a jerk and just decided, I'm going to make a visit to the mound.
Okay.
Or he could have had our kid keep throwing over to second.
Sure, kill some time.
He didn't, but the coach is screaming at his kid, stay on second base. Just stand on the base. He doesn't want him leading off because he doesn't want our guy wasting any time. And there's only like 20 seconds left now. We're like, all right, well, this game is about to be over.
Yeah.
We strike the kid out at bat. So that makes two outs. Right. This is as time is running out. It's like 3-2. They make the second out. Their coach screams, take the field. Their whole team shoots out onto the
field.
Like they're storming Normandy. It was crazy. They just all take, our kids are all staring like, what the hell is going on here?
But there are only two outs.
He says, oh God, what did he say? We give our last out. He had a word he said, and I can't remember what it was now, but he's like, we forfeit our last out. Next inning starts. Starts right now. It started before time was up.
Oh my.
He's on the field screaming that we're starting the next inning. We forfeit our last out. It's the sixth inning now. It started before time was up.
This guy's a nutcase.
And our coaches, we're all looking at each other like, what in the hell is this? We've never heard of giving up your last out.
Yeah.
We're like, and I'm thinking, I've never seen that in a rule book that you're allowed to. I've never heard of it. Maybe in these timed games, we're just like, what in the world is that? And the umpire, who was clearly had enough of this guy by now, says, I'll give you the last out. We're not starting a new inning. And he's screaming, we started it under time. There was time left. There was a second left. We get to play another inning.
Good.
So Lord. We're like.
Somebody hit him with a
So
bat.
He demands, get the tournament director. So now for the second time, the
oh,
tournament
no.
director. We got another 20-minute delay. And we're thinking they're going to end this game. There's no way they're letting this do it. Yeah. The umpire comes back, put 20 minutes on the clock.
What?
Because once you hit, once you finish the 90, if you're still finishing an inning, there's 20 minutes, and then it's a dead stop. So they're like, yeah, we're playing more. And we're just like, son, like, are you serious?
Good Lord.
So we have to bat then. We add three more runs. So now we're up by 8.
Oh, no.
And they go up and down 1, 2, 3.
Jeez.
So we stuck it to him a little bit, which we're happy about. Because he screwed himself because it's runs given up is the first tiebreaker. And if there's only two pool play games. So if you're going to finish 1-1, you're going to be tied with a bunch of teams.
Right.
It's going to come down to your runs against.
Oh, my God.
So that was an interesting moment.
What
I've never heard of it.
This guy is way too intense. Way too intense.
I could see if you're down by a run and this is how we advance or not. You try to mm-hmm. pull out all the stops. He's down by 5. And at this age, anybody could score 8-9 runs at a moment's notice.
Yeah.
But it was just interesting to me that down 5 runs, you're going to say, we give up the out, take the field. And the kids all sprinted out there. When I was coaching first base, when he yanked the one kid out of right field.
Yeah.
And sat him on the bench and played with 8. And I looked at the first baseman. I said, coach, pretty intense, huh? He looks at me and goes, we do this all the time. I thought, these poor kids. These poor
kids. Seriously. That's not any way to play the game. He's lucky he's got kids who come back every year.
You would think.
I wouldn't want to play for a coach like that. It ruins the game. My
Raj,
goodness.
My good friend Tim Mahoney, who was the president of our Little League for a long time,
mm-hmm.
every year when we'd start the year, we'd have our board meeting. We'd pull out the new Little League rule book. We get sent the green book every year.
Mm-hmm.
It's about 160 pages.
Oh, boy.
And Tim would say, remind everybody, they write this book for the parents, not because of the kids.
Yeah.
And that's the truth, because all of us parents and coaches are the idiots
mm-hmm.
that give the sport or whatever, hockey, baseball, basketball, football, whatever.
Sure.
We're the problem. It's yeah. not the kids that are just trying to play the game. We did have one interesting moment on our side in that game. There's a boy on our team, Paulie. I love him to death. I love every kid on this team. They're
sure.
good kids. All of his parents are the lunatics, but the kids are all good. Paulie, who is a hulking beast child, he's a wrestler. He's a football player. He's probably an 11-year-old who's about 5'5" and a good 150, 160 pounds.
Good
I mean,
Lord.
He's a linebacker.
Jeez.
He's on second base. Somebody hits a ground ball to their third baseman. Paulie's running to third, and the kid's standing there to tag him.
Oh, no.
And Paulie lays a shoulder into this kid, and, like, I don't know if he really lifted him up into the air and threw him, but, like, the kid went down in a lump.
God.
And I got my hands in my head like, oh, God, Paulie, you can't do that. What are you doing? And you hear Paul, the umpire comes running out, and Paulie puts his hands up and goes, he was in my way! He was in my way! Like the most innocent thing. Like, what was I supposed to do?
Right.
He was there. What am I going to do? And we're like, Paulie, well, you have to just let him tag you or avoid it. Or you stop or go backwards or run around him. But you can't technically, you know,
you can't nail the kid.
The poor boy was crying. I mean, Paulie had a good 60 pounds on the kid, and he just laid him out.
Well, that's horrible.
It was terrible. We all felt terrible. And poor Paulie is like so innocent, like, hey, what? He was in my way. What was I supposed to do?
Avoid the tag. Go down. Go low. Slide.
Use your hips. Throw them out of the way. Try to get out of the way of that one. Yeah. But no, we go through. So,
God, but it's great to see kids play baseball. I love seeing
it's so much fun. And my son Tommy, who struggles to hit like nothing else, mm-hmm. Raj, it drives me insane because he has the best swing in the family, but the boy cannot make contact to save his life. I mean, just pulls his head out, lack of confidence. I don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, for the weekend, going into the championship game on Sunday. He's like, oh, for the weekend. And I'm just like, God, why do I even make him play? You know, it just drives me crazy. I'm ready. I'm losing my mind. And I'm like, Tommy, he wants a new weed whacker. I'm like, get some hits in the championship game. I'll give you your damn weed whacker.
Yeah.
What do you think he does, Raj?
Gets a hit.
Two hits. Two RBIs each.
Yeah, baby.
And I'm like, you know, now I'm annoyed more than happy for him. I'm like,
because he didn't get hits earlier.
Well, it's like, why now can you suddenly do this and you never can do it otherwise?
Incentives, man. Oh, incentives. God.
Apparently. Jeez. It's ridiculous. But it was a nice weekend. The boys actually won the championship. And this little team has been together for about 4 years, I think.
Nice.
They've never won an out-of-state tournament. They've won tournaments in-state, but every year we do one or two tournaments out-of-state.
Mm-hmm.
We generally lose in the semifinals or lose in the championship. They've been bridesmaids a million times, as the coach likes to say. We've been bridesmaids forever. And they actually won one for once. That's so they got to shave their coach's head at practice on Friday night. He's going to the championship.
Hope he wasn't bald to start with.
He wasn't. He has a nice silver head of hair that he has no longer. But he made a promise that if you guys win, I'll let you shave my head.
That's great.
And they came through. So it was a fun weekend. So thank you for indulging me in that.
Hey, please. I love hearing the stories about your kids and baseball. That's wonderful.
312-981-72. And we're going to take a quick break. We'll do the news. And then we'll start getting into the week that was. My old friend Kathy Griffin got herself in a ton of trouble. And President Trump pulled us out of the Paris Treaty. We're trying to do our best to conserve the earth. And while admittedly the numbers seem small, they are a big deal. And we pulled out, and we'll go over what he said about that and where that leaves us and what people are saying about it as well. 312-981-7200. Take your calls as well throughout the night on 720 WG. You two in town this weekend. Two shows at Soldier Field. It's the Joshua Tree Tour, Roger. Joshua Tree out 30 years ago.
Wow.
One of my old buddies from high school, Matt Gersh, who I'm friends with on Facebook. I haven't talked to him forever, but I think about with you two because I remember being with Matt Gersh at Mount Carmel High School in church. We sang U2 songs.
What?
That album was out. I still haven't found what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Is a bit of a gospel-y song. And I remember us using that in church. And one other song, I believe, from the Joshua Tree was used at Mass at Mount Carmel back in the day.
And Matt
posts on Facebook. He lives in Florida now. He's in town this weekend for the shows and to see the Cubs play the Cards. And I'm bummed because we got stuff going on and I'm not going to get to either show. And I promised myself that I've seen you two about 5 or 6, 7 times in concert live. And I promised myself next time they came to town, we'd go. We got stuff going on. I can't get.
Well, call them and tell them to reschedule.
They really should.
Yes.
That would be nice.
How dare they?
Bono. Who do you think you are? Whatever. Guns N' Roses is coming back to town, Raj. Maybe we go to that in November.
Right,
United
sure.
Center? Come on.
Why not? I'm sorry. I just.
It's a good show.
I'm an oldie.
So is Guns N' Roses now.
I know.
They're not getting any younger. Hey, they don't move like they used to. When they first reunited, Axl Rose broke his foot jumping around on stage right away. All right, it's time for the news. After news, let's get into Kathy Griffin and what happened with her this week. 312-981-7200 if you have a comment that you want to make or a text you want to send right now. Let's check the headlines with Roger. Matt Bobala with you, Radio 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. 6-0 says, love the baseball talk. Watch some 13U girls play softball. Good play, parents and coaches, great. Maybe the boys need to learn from the girls. Maybe they do. Yeah. Generally, I would say that's absolutely right. Okay, so Jess is getting it queued up. So Kathy Griffin is a comedian, mm-hmm. and she's been a million different things. Her show, I think, was called Life on the D-List. She tours like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
She was on Suddenly Susan. That was her first big break with Brooke Shields back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
She had an episode of Seinfeld she was in that I believe she was written into based on her making fun of Seinfeld, because she had auditioned for a show or for Seinfeld and like didn't get it. And she used to do, you know, a lot of her comedy is making fun of bigger celebrities.
Right.
And that, you know, I used to see her do this back 20 years ago when I lived in L.A. I got to know her from her doing appearances on the radio show I worked on out there. And she used to organize, her and Janine Garofalo, I believe, they were part of the Groundlings, and which is sort of Second City-ish type troupe out there.
Mm-hmm. Long-time troupe.
Yeah.
A lot of people over
Will
the Ferrell last several decades.
There. A lot of people have gone through there.
Yeah.
And she organized these Sunday night little shows called Hot Cup of Talk, where comedians like her and Janine Garofalo and Bobcat Goldthwait and Taylor Negron would come out and just do sets of stuff they were working on, kind of mm-hmm. off-the-cuff stuff. And it was fun, and it was hilarious. And we had a blast, and I got to know her a little bit. And so she's made a career out of doing little stuff like this. And I think she's funny. A lot of, you know, certain people don't. She's mm-hmm. pretty abrasive. She's pretty crude. And that's just what she does. And I like her a lot. And she's a really good person. But she made a big mistake, I think, in posing for these photos with this photographer who I believe is known for doing some pretty bold, daring, risque things. And if you haven't seen the photos, they're awful. It's a photo of Kathy holding a doll head type thing, a life-size head, what looks like Donald Trump. She's holding it by the hair. But not only is it a severed head, it is a bloodied severed head. And it looks like something you would see in a third world country where somebody was just overthrown. It looks terrible. It looks terrible. And the way I first heard about this, I actually just saw on Twitter some people writing stuff about Kathy Griffin.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw, because I follow Kathy on Twitter, I saw this little video she made. And it just, there was a video, and underneath it just said, I was wrong, I'm sorry, I apologize. And so I watched the video. It's like 40 seconds of her saying, guys, I push things, I move the line, I jump over the line, I did something that I shouldn't have done. I'm sorry about it. I apologize. I'm taking it down. I've asked the photographer to take down the images. TMZ got a hold of them before they were even released and put them out. And so she was apologetic about the whole thing. Since then, you know, she was attacked. I don't know how viciously or what happened. Donald Trump sent out a tweet that just said Kathy Griffin should be ashamed of herself. My children are having a very tough time with this, especially my 11-year-old son, Baron.
Mm-hmm.
And then he wrote sick. And I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but that's pretty much what he wrote. And Kathy had issued that one statement and then kind of went dark for a couple of days until she had a press conference, I think on, was it Friday?
It was yesterday.
This morning, Friday morning? Friday morning, she had a press conference with an attorney to tell her side of the story or who knows do what. Jess, are you ready to play that? Are you okay? All right, go ahead and hit what Kathy Griffin does in her press conference.
I'm not afraid of Donald Trump. He's a bully. I've dealt with older white guys trying to keep me down my whole life, my whole career. I'm a woman in a very male-dominated field. I love what I do. I love making people laugh more than anything in the world. And I have learned over the years that sometimes when you do stand-up, and I've done it in a war zone, and I've done it at Walter Reed Hospital, and I've done it at Carnegie Hall, sometimes people want, you know, a joke that's out there and a little crazy. So regarding the image that I participated in, that apology absolutely stands. I feel horrible. I have performed in war zones. The idea that this, you know, made people think of this tragedy, to have been touched by this tragedy, is horrifying and it's horrible. Trust me, if I could redo the whole thing, I would have had a blow-up doll and no ketchup. You know, I make mistakes. I'm an out-there comedian. I'm an in-your-face comedian. But I just wanted to say, you know, if you don't stand up, you get run over. And what's happening to me has never happened ever in the history of this great country, which is that a sitting president of the United States and his grown children and the First Lady are personally, I feel, personally trying to ruin my life forever. Forever. You guys know him. He's never going to stop. I know him. Let me talk to like a camera like I'm talking to him. And I might make a couple jokes because I'm super nervous. Everyone's pointing to their camera. I'll just this one. All right. I'll sort of look in this direction. All right. So I know him. All right. So the Donald, it's me, the Kathy. And if you guys don't know this, if you meet him, he wants you to call him the Donald, which I've always thought was the weird. And I remember saying to him the first time, OK, I'm the Kathy. And then went right over his nest. OK, that was a joke about his hair. But I have seen eggs in it. Like I think I've seen allegedly. I am teasing the president because this is America and you shouldn't have to die for it. The death threats that I'm getting are constant and they are detailed and they are serious and they are specific. And today it's me and tomorrow it could be you. So yeah, I'm an obnoxious comedian. I'm not the most famous person in the world. I'm just standing here with Lisa. I have an amazing First Amendment attorney, Alan Isaacman. If you're not familiar with his work, he won the landmark case, the People versus Larry Flint. I believe so passionately about this. If I don't stand up and say this, I'm afraid there's going to be some 12-year-old nerdy girl like me in Forest Park, Illinois, who's going to maybe be watching me to see what I do. And this bully and this president, of all people, is going to come after me? He picked the wrong redhead. And he's sort of a redhead, although it's sort of like a parfait cup sometimes. I mean, there's like a red and then like a yellow. And I don't know. I think Melania does a lot of nice and easy. I don't know, but maybe she doesn't. The point, I digress. So that's what I do, you guys. I improvise. I try jokes. My mouth is really dry because I'm so nervous. But I don't want this to happen to anyone else. I tour for a living. I love doing it. I perform everywhere people want me to laugh. And honestly, one night it's a performing arts center, and the next night it's two shows in the Pottawatomie, Wisconsin casino. And there's been a change, a real shift change, in, you know, starting maybe about 18 months ago, where Fox News ain't got nothing on me. Although I think you should know, my mother, who thinks Fox News is real, is not speaking to me because she's in love with Tucker Carlson. So I'm even in trouble with my mother. So don't worry, everyone hates me. I do. I need water. I'm probably shaking. And I'm afraid I'm going to get that under boob sweat, which is really the bad one. That was not appropriate, right? That wasn't appropriate. Okay, so I'm not good at being appropriate. I only know how to do comedy one way. It's in-your-face comedy. I keep it real. I am going to make fun of the president. And you know what? I'm going to make fun of him more now. More. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to threaten him. I have no desire to harm him or anyone. I would never want to harm anybody. But, you know, I've made fun of W. I made fun of Clinton. Oh, God, remember the Monica Dress days? Those were the days. You could make dress jokes all day long, and nobody tried to kill you. You shouldn't have to die for this. I'm under a Secret Service investigation.
And the First Family did not come after you with any of the other presidents. You know, it is so unpresidential for them to respond to a comic.
I get what I am. I'm the shiny object. I get it. We all know what's going on here. They're using me as the shiny object so that nobody's talking about his FBI investigation. All right? I get it. And I made a horrible, horrible mistake, and I made a horrible call. I understand. But everywhere I go, people actually come up to me. And I, like I said, I go everywhere. It's what I do. And they say, you know, oh, I'm a housewife, and my kids have been driving me crazy, and, oh, I just needed 2 hours to blow off some steam, and I'm glad you went there, and you're saying the things I'm thinking. Those are my peeps. I'm not for everybody. I'm barely an acquired taste, frankly. On a good day, I'm an acquired taste. But honestly, my whole career, I'm 56 years old. I'm 110 pounds wet. I've had everybody turn on me, and I just want to make people laugh. That's all I want to do. So I screwed up. But I want the gay guy who came to see me in Lake Charles, Louisiana a few weeks ago, who said, I wanted to come here because I'm scared to come out, but I get to come here and laugh for 2 hours. That's what I'm
telling you, that's why I'm here. It's honestly, it's not for me. It's for them. I think a few people might actually be watching me, and I want them to see this old dame. I'm not laying down for this guy. I'm going to make fun of him. I'm going to make jokes about him and the housewives and Kardashians. But, you know, he does provide a lot of material. I mean, you got to be honest. He really, it's a good time to be a comedian. It's scary to be a citizen, but it's a good time to be a comedian.
That was great.
Okay. Now, as I said, I know Kathy, or I knew Kathy a lifetime ago, 20 years ago, and I like Kathy a lot. I really do. That is the stupidest press conference I've ever heard in my life. And I support her right to do whatever she wants because there is a right to free speech in this country. But this, I don't know if that press conference is an apology or what. It's that I don't know what the hell to make out of that because that was stupid. On one hand, she says the president is bullying her. It's so unpresidential, or her lawyer said unpresidential, for the first family to come after her. Oh, I did this to Clinton. I did this to Bush. No, you never held a bloodied, severed head, you idiot. Anybody who does that, you can hate Trump all you want. And believe me, as she said, she also acknowledged it's a great time to be a comedian. Comedians in our history have never made as much fun of a president as they are right now. Even through the Lewinsky scandal, people did not make careers out of making fun of a president as they have been able to so far right now. I mean, it's crazy the fodder that comedians have. The First Amendment is alive and well. For Kathy to say that she's being bullied by the First Family is just BS and ridiculous. I support her right to take those photos. Of course I do. I also support the right for everybody to be furious at her about it and for people to fire her if they're offended by it. We have those rights as well. And she needs to understand that. And to think that she is all upset that the First Family takes, you know, oh, I'm a shiny object in this. Of course, you're going to be used as that. But you brought all of this upon yourself. You did something incredibly stupid. And yes, she acknowledges that in one sentence, but then the next sentence says, I don't deserve to die for this. Well, of course you don't deserve to die for it. But there are lunatics out there, no matter what, that if you do something ridiculously outlandish, will come out of the woodwork. That happens. And the president isn't asking anybody to give her death threats. The president, Trump, was, his tweet against her was one of the most restrained things he's tweeted. He could have gone after her very vociferously, and I don't think he did. He just said she should be ashamed. My kids are having a really tough time with this, especially my 11-year-old son, Baron. Sick. Who wouldn't write that? Who wouldn't think that? The photo is gruesome. It looks terrible. It's incredibly realistic. It really is. And I don't like Trump. You all know this. I get, you know, as soon as I say we're going to talk about this, well, I don't want to have your political views forced down my throat again. I'm sick of this. So I know you think that I'm all anti-Trump, anti-Trump. And believe me, I'm not happy with President Trump. I don't like Trump. I respect the office of the presidency. And that's what Kathy Griffin, well, that's where she stepped over the line. You have to respect the office of the president. And when you show a severed head, bloodied head, it's like you're advocating. Here she is crying that she's getting death threats. What is that photo supposed to look like to people? What does that look like? We get so upset about what the alt-right says and what Bannon and all these guys, these little things they say, are those dog whistles, are those things calling people out? On the left, we have to realize that we have to adhere to the same stuff. And she is just making it worse by now making about poor little me. Oh, I'm being bullied. Oh, I did all these things. Hey, I'm an in-your-face comedian. If you're an in-your-face comedian, then you get what you get. And you can't cry that you people can't be upset and give me death threats and do these things. And, oh, I just want to be out there for this guy and that guy. I'm just doing this for the people. Oh, God. Nobody is forcing you off the road. People might be canceling shows because they're... because people are upset about what you did, but that's what you did. And then to have a press conference where I understand she's nervous and all, but for God's sake, she's performed in front of 20,000 people before. You can be in front of a few cameras. I'm not buying that wholeheartedly. And then to just continue to make fun of him in ways that if there was never the severed head, it wouldn't matter at all. Everybody's making fun of him. The late night shows all make fun of him. everybody has jokes at Trump's expense. Twitter is filled with them all day long. That's not a big deal, and nobody is giving anybody a real hard time about that. This went so far over the line for the office of the president, no matter who it is. We cannot, as Americans, look like we're advocating physical harm to our president. And I know, and a lot of stuff was out like on social media this week about people are all upset about this, but let's remember all of this. And there was an incredible amount of vile things said and images about President Obama over the last 8 years, and we were incensed by them. But you know what? It was never a celebrity showing a picture of a lynching or showing it. It was never somebody that somebody could take something out on. If Fox News had showed a severed President Obama head, we would have been a huge uproar and there would have been people fired. That would have happened. And so it's not surprising that CNN, I don't blame at all for firing her. I know that they're definitely, supportive of free speech at CNN, but think about the position CNN is in, that they're already called fake news all year long. Now they're supposed to have their New Year's Eve celebration rung in by the girl who is holding up the severed, bloodied head. They can't. They had to let her go. Anderson Cooper had to come out against this. I don't blame anybody. I'm sure they love her and support her, but she made a decision that you can't stand behind. You can't say I'm an in-your-face comedian and this is what you get and this is what I do and then cry. You can't be upset at me. You can't, Yeah, the people shouldn't be giving her death threats. That's stupid. And that's the type of stuff that President Trump has riled up in people over the last 18 months. Let's face it. He had rallies where he helped people chant, lock her up. That's the type of thing he's brought on. But no matter who the president is or how much you disagree with them, you cannot look like you're advocating for a coup or an assassination or anything like that. And that's what that looks like.
You brought it up, but I was, before I had a chance to say I was going to play devil's advocate. Mm-hmm. What she did was wrong. Yes, I agree 1,000%. What people did in depicting the death, the hanging, the decapitation of President Obama, whether they were famous or not, but those depictions that were made public, because anything on the internet is public.
Yeah.
Were just as degrading, just as reprehensible, but the uproar over those images, which again defamed the office of the presidency, mm-hmm. were nowhere near as boisterous as the uproars over this image and others that have come out.
Let me say this about that, Raj. Here's what I would put on that. All right. I believe that there were a lot of us very upset whenever we saw anything about President Obama like that. But how did we see it? We saw it in social media or somebody passing around different crap like that. Now listen, we've also had, since Trump has been in office, maybe I don't know how much I've seen in America, but we have Trump pinatas. Mm-hmm. I've never seen that for a president before. We've had effigies burned in other countries. Mm-hmm. We've seen a lot of that. Okay, so that's my sort of equivalency of what we had with President Obama. We didn't have somebody relatively famous holding up a decapitated bloody head. We did have pictures of effigies burning, different things like that that are somewhat similar, but we never had a name attached to it where somebody could be somebody who death threats are going to go to, who's going to get fired from jobs, who you could say, you did this, you must pay a price for, we're upset about this.
I understand.
So I think that's somewhat the difference in this.
I understand your point. I don't agree with it to that point that there is a difference. I saw it on social media, and I didn't care that it was Kathy Griffin. I knew who she was when I saw the picture. I saw it on my Twitter feed. It came out through Newsweek or, one of the news organizations I follow. Mm-hmm. It was being reposted like nauseam. But I saw the image of the head, and that bothered me, just as it bothered me with all the images negative images of President Obama.
Right.
So I'm separating that part out from the presenters of those images. In other words, I don't care how it got there. The image itself is disrespectful, whether
Absolutely.
It's President Obama or President Trump. And it didn't matter how bad it looked. The fact that someone took the time to present that level of negativity about the office of the President of the United States in America, forget the other countries, but in America, is degrading and demeaning to the office of president and should not be allowed, even though it's free speech, and I'm 10,000% behind free speech, but something needs to be done, in my opinion, to prevent that level of criticism. That, to me, goes beyond having free speech and disagreeing with the practices or the edicts of the President of the United States.
See, that's interesting because I think we cannot start placing limits on free speech.
I agree wholeheartedly.
That's very dangerous. Very dangerous. And I wouldn't want her to get arrested for this because she could get arrested. She's complaining about a Secret Service investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're not saying, Kathy, we think you violated your free speech rights. They're saying we're investigating whether this is a threat on the
exactly.
president. That's right. why it's stupid and wrong. And I will say this, Raj, mm-hmm. everything that I ever saw with President Obama, and maybe you saw different things, but I'm thinking back all the different very hateful things that went through social media over mm-hmm. the last 8 years. I never saw anything as realistic as this. I saw cartoonishness. I saw effigies. I saw all sorts of things. You look at Kathy, if you're right. from Zimbabwe and you come to town and you see that photo, you'd be, you know, if you came from some country where that crap
sure.
could happen,
yeah.
you'd go, oh, did that happen here? Because right. that looks like it actually happened.
But as far as the depictions of President Obama, they depicted him being hung.
Right.
That
right.
is a threat to the president.
I would bet you, Raj, and we didn't hear about it.
I know.
But I would bet you that those were investigated.
They probably were.
I bet you we could hear stories of the Secret Service going insane for the last mm-hmm. 8 years with everything they had to investigate.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was craziness. And I'm not surprised the Secret Service
is didn't hear from President Obama or his family. He's got two little girls. Well, they're not so little now, but he's got two girls.
But nothing.
Them seeing the images of that were not as disturbing as
the
President
images of
Trump's
President Obama
children.
Were never on TMZ. Were never circulated through social
media.
They were
media on
like this
social
was.
Media.
They
That's
were on
where
social
I saw
media
them.
Where you could find them, but they weren't presented by news organizations ever. They weren't thrown at us like these were. You could see them. They were out there. And I'm sure they had to protect the girls from images of President Obama that were out there. This is different. This is different.
I agree.
Different.
The only reason
and
that
somebody
this made...
famous is attached to this,
right.
so it's insanely blown up in the news media.
But that's what I'm saying. This only made the news media because it was Kathy Griffin.
I'll tell you what. I will say this. I do believe if Kathy's not involved in this photo shoot,
mm-hmm.
but this artist who's supposedly relatively famous just does his photo shoot of severed heads of Trump
right.
and releases it, it's mm-hmm. still in the news and we still talk about it. Not for as long, not for as much.
No.
But I guarantee you it still makes the news because this, to me, Raj, and I am the biggest supporter of President Obama there was. I voted for him twice. I would have voted for him a third time. I do not like Trump. But President Obama never had something quite like this out there in the public. Not quite like this. This looks like I know it's not a threat. I know it's Kathy being funny, thinking it's funny. It wasn't. But this looks like an actual threat. Think of the uproar on Game of Thrones when they used Bush's head, when they had all the heads on a pike, and you couldn't even tell it was President Bush. Somebody figured it out or somebody on set who knew released it. I had seen the episodes. You weren't going to say, oh, my God, look, they used George Bush's head for one of these. Nobody ever would have really known that. But somebody who worked on the set revealed that they did that. And there was a lot of heat at HBO over that, as there should have been. It's disrespecting the office of the president. And no matter how much you hate the guy that's in there, We all as Americans have to respect the office, even if we want to get the guy in it thrown out. And this is going over the line, disrespecting that office. Now, I disagree that something should be done to prevent somebody from doing like this, but somebody who does something like this has to understand, if you do something like this, A, Secret Service is going to call, find out how cuckoo you are.
Mm-hmm.
B, some people, half the country, 30% depending on what you want to say about the votes, are going to be really mad at you and pissed off at you and boycott your shows. Look at what happened to the Dixie Chicks.
Oh, that's right.
All they did was say we're ashamed he's from Texas while they were in London, and country music stations burned bulldozed their CDs.
They couldn't get bookings or anything. Yeah.
Destroyed their careers for a time. So that was nothing. And that's something that shouldn't have happened. They were railroaded, and that's a First Amendment freedom that should have been. Now, you can be annoyed with them, but there was a proactive working by country music to harm them, I think, there. And that was despicable. What Kathy did is so much different. Okay, we're late for the news. Let's take a quick break, and we'll take your calls. I have a couple of people waiting patiently, 312-981-7200. If you have something to say about this, we'll get to you after the news, which is next. Matt Bubala here with you, 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Thanks for staying up late with us. Talking about Kathy Griffin and the image that has got her in a lot of hot water and got her begging. I don't know. She's not begging for forgiveness. She asked for forgiveness. She said she's sorry. Then she made more fun of him, which kind of diminished her whole seriousness in the whole thing. It's a weird rambling press conference. She said she was nervous, and I understand that. For the most part, the texters are upset with me for being upset with Kathy, which you people always surprise me. I never know which side you guys are going to land on, I guess. But somebody points out something I think really interesting here. Where is it? One of my texters.
That text screen moves pretty fast when they come in.
262 says, Ted Nugent has called for the death of Obama and Hillary repeatedly. And then he gets invited to the White House. And that is so true. What the hell is Trump doing bringing Ted Nugent to the White House, a man who had to have been under, and I believe we read was under investigation by the FBI or the Secret Service because of things he said about President Obama. Ridiculously awful things about President Obama. Now, nobody protested him. Nobody did this. Nobody did that. Well, A, he didn't have the photo. That would have garnered a bigger storm. B, when's the last time Ted Nugent did anything?
No.
I mean, I imagine he does concerts, and people that are Trump supporters or supporters, far, far right supporters, are cool with him saying that stuff. But that was extremely awful. Absolutely. And I imagine if he had something for people to boycott, the left would have been boycotting it like crazy. Not much left to boycott for old Ted. But yes, that was absolutely awful as well. 312-981-7200. Joe's been hanging on for quite a bit. Joe, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. Hey, listen, Matt, I got to compliment you. I know you're not enthralled with President Trump. You're not enamored with him.
No, I am not.
I personally am. Okay. But nevertheless, your last comments prompted this. Naomi Judd, and who is a ferocious woman, a nasty woman, and Madonna, who has thought long and hard about burning down the White House.
Yeah, Madonna did make this really stupid comment about burning down the White House, and she got a lot of heat for that came out.
They're just words, okay?
That's the big difference, isn't it? There's no visual with those.
Oh, you got it. That's the key in the equation here. So you rationally, and the emphasis on the word rationally, looked at both sides of the equation. I'm a conservative. I'm a Republican. You're a Democrat. You're a liberal. But nevertheless, you chose to look at both sides of the coin and give an equilateral look, which I compliment you for. That's it, basically, my friend.
Well, I got to jump back to something, Joe, because you said you're not enamored with President Bush, with President Trump. And then did you say that you are enamored with President Trump? You really have liked him so far?
Well, look at the latest development here.
Okay.
The French Connection, if you will. He spent, 35 minutes explaining the economics of the scenario. We're obligated to pay money, just like NATO, if you will. we're sponsoring 80% of the funding for NATO right now. He's asking for people to pay their fair share. It's the same scenario with the environment.
Now,
he's concerned with the environment, so am I, so am you. He just wants an equitable solution to the thing.
Joe, let me ask you about this, because with the NATO thing, everything I've read is that Trump keeps saying it wrong. Everybody is supposed to commit to spending 2% of their GDP on defense in their own country. It's not some slush fund we're throwing money into. So when he says we're doing 80% because we spend an insane amount on our military and budget towards that, we're spending and everybody else is working towards it. But nobody else has not come to the defense of anybody else. Nobody else is shirking their obligations because they haven't spent this money yet. It's to have your defense prepared if it's needed. The only time all the countries have had to come together and invoke that clause was after 9/11, and they all did. So it's not like everybody is not doing what they're supposed to do. Maybe they haven't gotten to the place where they're spending the money yet. They still have, I believe, 7 more years to meet the agreement and do it. But President Trump keeps positioning this as if we're writing these huge checks to NATO and nobody else is doing it. That commitment is to build up your own defenses to a certain amount.
Well, I might stand corrected there because I'll readily admit I thought it was a slush fund.
I thought
it was a communal thing where everybody contributes.
It's not everybody's supposed to be writing these checks. Now, I'll say this. These are the articles I've read, and I'm not reading them on some crazy left-wing thing. They're, news articles from, I know he calls them fake news outlets, but I believe I'm sure they're in the Journal, too, and things like that, that this is how NATO works. Everybody's supposed to spend 2% of their GDP on defense, and not everybody has gotten it up to that yet. And other people have the ability to. And, of course, ours is way bigger than a lot of people because we got a bigger GDP, right? Same thing with Paris. Now, you could argue a lot of things on this, and we're hopefully going to have somebody next week to explain a little more about this. But also from what I'm reading on this, they're voluntary reductions and voluntary things. Yes, we already paid in $1 billion. There were 2 more $1 billion we were going to pay in. And a lot of that is so underdeveloped countries, we can help start getting moving on clean energy, things like that. Countries that, because they're so poor, aren't going to stop burning coal, aren't going to stop burning these things because they can't afford to. We can. And it just drives me crazy, Joe, that we're talking about we need more coal production. We need more coal production. Everything I'm reading talks about how natural gas that we have in abundance burns much cleaner. The solar and the wind and everything else that we're developing, these industries are taking over coal, and yet we're trying to bring back coal, which is, let's face it, not great for the earth, not good for people's lungs. I mean, who's out there going, God, if only I could get a coal mining job? Now, I know that there's coal miners who are suffering, and there's parts of the country where people are suffering. But is this what we want to build for the next 10 years, more coal mining jobs? Doesn't that
seem like that doesn't
make sense?
Do I have a little bit of an audience here?
Sure. Okay. You got me, at least. I don't know who else, Joe.
Okay. Very good. Touche. Very good point. But nevertheless, I read Bloomberg News, Fortune, I'm up to date, basically.
Okay.
I might stand corrected, as you so aptly put it, on NATO. But China, at last report, this was 6 months ago, they're opening up a new coal-fired power plant, easy for me to say, every 3 months.
Okay, so and President Trump said all that. Now, I've read in the last 2 days since this that they've stopped production on all sorts of coal plants and are actually so he keeps saying, oh, everybody gets to do this. Everybody gets to do all this stuff. We can't do anything.
Yeah.
Everything I've read is this accord by a certain date. I can't remember if it's 2020 or where it is, or 13 years from now.
Magic number,
so 2030. Yeah. No, I think it's 2030 because it's 13 years from now. And they're going to do all this. And they're going to do all that. By 2030, we all have to try to reduce our emissions by, I think, 25% before 2005 levels, something along those lines.
Okay, let me halt you there. Everybody?
That was the commitment, I think, that everybody's trying to get to.
That's the
by
Paris
2030,
Accord,
I believe, that all of these countries that signed on, our commitment is to try by 2030 to reduce our emissions to 25% less than what we were producing. I think it's in 2005. I think that's the number that they're going back to. You got to try to reduce it by 25% from that. So, yeah, in the meantime, you could build 100 coal plants. You could do everything you want. We could, too. It's all voluntary, what we're saying.
Exactly.
But we weren't in the process of doing that. We are cutting away those things. We're investing a lot in solar and wind and other natural things. China, as I understand what I've read since then, has stopped production of those plants and is actually ahead of their targets that they should meet this before 2030. Now, I know that they've been an awful, awful polluter over the years.
Sure.
And that's well known. But from what I've read, they are cutting back. They are committed to this and they are doing it. And, you know, listen, I understand maybe everything isn't great for certain sectors. We have to invest more in things, but it's, to me, it's about investing in the future. And I know President Trump, listen, he won because he committed to people in areas, in the states that really won it for him. It helped out
West
that
Virginia,
he was committed
sure.
to the poor communities that are having trouble. We need more manufacturing jobs, and coal was a big thing. Coal is not the future, from everything I've read. And I think clean burning coal is a little bit of a misnomer, isn't it? Is it really clean burning? It's not solar. It's not even
right.
natural gas, I don't think, as far as the cleanliness. So I'm not as enamored. You're right, Joe.
Okay. Well, listen, you know, look at Yucca Mountain. I'd like to give it back to the Democrats in that respect. That was a monumental project, $10 billion, as I understand it. I could be wrong there.
Was this where we were going to store our nuclear fuel?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, that was an interesting one, wasn't it? Because, did we spend $10 billion? But so what happened here, Joe? What happened was nobody wanted the nuclear rods going through their town on the train, right? Isn't that what derailed it?
Guess who was the speaker before Ryan who stated it's in?
It would be our buddy Denny Hastert?
No.
Oh, who?
The big guy. Freudian slip here. He's one of my favorite people.
We're not going all the way back to Tip O'Neill, right?
No. Shoot, right before.
Oh,
Ryan.
Wait, is this. It's not John Boehner or somebody.
No. A Democrat.
Harry Reid?
Harry Reid.
Okay. That's well, he's not a big guy. He's a little guy, isn't he?
Well, he's diminutive, that. But he thinks he's humongous.
So he didn't want it. He didn't want it in Nevada in the end?
That's right. That's where it's at, Yucca Mountain.
Yeah, but he fought against it?
Oh, well, yeah, he put his foot on it.
Well, maybe the people in Nevada said, hey, Harry, we're going to run your ass out of office if you bring all this nuclear waste to Nevada.
Wish they would have.
Well, I mean, you could see where it's you know what? I always advocated the quarry out here. That we got the big quarries that now we're filling with water out by Homewood. Let's put it there. Let's go. Get the government. Listen, we want to solve Illinois' problems, right, Joe? Illinois, we are the most bankrupt, awful-running state in the world right now. Let's bring all the nuclear waste here. We'll seal it up and make the government pay us $100 million a year to do it.
Well, the quarry is a good idea. That's what I told my daughter. She's in L.A. for the last 10 years. I said, you guys ought to dig a bunch of quarries out there, and when the rain comes, fill it in there. Don't forget about the mudslides. Collect the stuff.
Yeah, no kidding.
Matt, you've impressed me this evening.
Thank you, Joe. I think the other calls won't be as friendly, so I appreciate at least getting you in before we move on to others. Thanks for listening, as always. We do appreciate it. 312-981-7200. Mark is waiting patiently. Let's take a quick break. More calls next. 720 WGN. I don't hear President Trump.
Compliance with the terms of the Paris Accord and the onerous energy restrictions that is placed on the United States could cost America as much as 2.7 million lost jobs by 2025, according to the National Economic Research Associates. This includes 440,000 fewer manufacturing jobs, not what we need. Believe me, this is not what we need, including automobile jobs and the further decimation of vital American industries on which countless communities rely. They rely for so much, and we would be giving them so little.
That's just one clip of about an 18-minute speech that President Trump gave talking about why he's pulling out of Paris and the climate agreement. 312-981-7200. We'll talk a little bit more about that. But Mark has been holding very patiently for a very long time. Mark, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. I've got 3 points, basically. First of all, I have had to admit to myself that if there were a televised impeachment of Trump, I would be too tempted to enjoy it. That's how much I like Trump. And it's very troubling to me to have a man in office that I both don't trust and don't like. I distrust Bill Clinton, but in an odd way, I like him, if that makes any sense.
It's funny. I didn't like him, but I liked him as a president. I didn't like him once he said, once he lied to the American people so publicly. That drove me crazy. But I understand what you're saying.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Second point. We don't need humor to be grisly. And freedom, it's a cliche, but freedom of speech is not freedom to yell fire in a crowded theater. Kathy Griffin's stunt was potentially inflammatory, and I would say, despite all the crude things that Trump has said about grabbing women in a certain way and some of the other stuff, Kathy's stunt even went below that in its crudity. That's my opinion. Yeah. Third point, when you played the tape of her, I recognized the words from printed article I'd read yesterday. And my reaction was kind of telling. Oh, that's Kathy Griffin. That's not a little girl.
Oh, the way her voice sounds.
Yeah. And I mean, she's sounding all whiny. And I thought, oh, this must be a news story about a little girl's tale of woe. And then I thought, oh, it's Kathy Griffin. And look how she sounds. I mean, if I hadn't known from the article I read yesterday, I would never have known from that tape that she's in her 50s.
Yeah, that's just kind of how Kathy sounds. I think she's always sort of sounded like that. I don't think she was sounding particularly whiny or anything like that. But it's just
any worse than usual.
Yeah, that's just her voice. Her voice maybe is a little grating to some. I find her endearing, and I love her. I love Kathy Griffin. I hate that she did this.
Oh, yeah.
I hate that she did something this stupid. And quite honestly, I hate that she hired First Amendment attorney instead of a – what she needs is like whoever Exxon probably hired after the Valdez went down. You need a damage control attorney because this is not – you know, she's coming out on the attack, and it's like, wait a minute. What – he's not. Yeah, he's a bully. He's not bullying you. He sent one tweet. And I think Eric Trump sent something nasty, too. But I'm sorry. That's not an all out attack on Kathy Griffin. Him yelling at the MSNBC reporter at the rally and people turning on her. That's bullying. You know what he did to Megyn Kelly? You could sort of call bullying. But him sending a tweet of disgust at what she did is not bullying. It's responding.
Yeah.
And
now,
so
I will say this on the when I saw her on a nighttime, you know, late night talk show, she's acerbic in her humor, but she didn't sound quite like the little girl that I heard tonight. You know, she sounded much more adult.
Well, she acknowledged at the beginning of it, we didn't play all of it, but she acknowledged over and over again that she was extremely nervous about the whole thing. And I think that, you know, she has probably been getting death threats, and that probably has never happened to her in her career, I'm sure, because she makes fun of the Kardashians mostly. So nobody's, you know, defending them to the death. So she probably is like, whoa, holy crap, I really did something here that I regret. And now I'm going to apologize, but I can't help myself. I'm also going to make fun at the same time. And I think that diminished the whole thing, having to always be on and now make more fun of him while I'm doing this. And I'm going to continue making fun of him. Well, nobody told you you couldn't. We said, don't pretend you just killed the man. That's where you get into trouble. That's what she doesn't get. And it's unfortunate.
It's too bad. It's too bad that it took the death threats to make her realize that she did make a mistake.
And I don't think it's making her think she made a mistake. I think it's making her think, can you believe this bully's got these people making death threats? And that's unfortunate.
Yeah. She's sorry about what's happening to her. I don't know if she's sorry about what she did.
I think that's a very interesting comment, Mark. I think that you got something there. She's more sorry about what's happening because of it to her than that she did this.
And I
don't know if
she's She's like a little kid who's been told, don't touch the hot stove. She touches it and then demands that the burn be made to go away.
Well, I don't think anybody ever said don't touch the hot stove. I think she touched the hot stove without realizing it was going to be quite that hot.
She must have known better.
I don't think she did. I mean, she joked in the video that was released, like, oh, I'm going to get in trouble for this. I'm sure she had no idea. And listen, in some ways I could see where in a moment, but and I don't know how realistic it looked. God, in that photo, it looks ridiculously realistic. And I don't know if there was any photoshopping done with that or anything like that, or if that was all on there. But she should have realized what she was doing. But I will say this. We're in an era where it is a free-for-all on the ability to make fun of a president. Nobody has ever.
Yeah.
Now, incredibly, as Roger brought up, incredibly vile, terrible, mean-spirited things were done towards President Obama. But the late-night talk shows, every comedian, The Daily Show, all those things, John Oliver and Bill Maher, none of that was going on in such a concerted fashion towards a president ever before. Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, nobody has been, you know, you can say, oh, it's the left, it's the left. They didn't make fun of George W. Bush like this. Now they joke that he was dumb or this or that, but it was minor. It was painfully minor in comparison. Yeah. Now, Trump has brought all this upon himself, and he's a gift that keeps on giving every single day to these people. But let's face it, Kathy is driving me a little crazy with that, because I've seen Trump's tweets. There was one about Kathy. There have been 18 million others since then. She's old news as far as that. She just brought herself back into the news by having the press conference and then made it about her instead of about what she did. All right, Mark, I got to grab
the shoot from the hip philosophy is the essence of our communication. Nobody stops to have foresight about what they're saying and doing.
Yeah. Think before you act. All right, Mark, thank you so much. I appreciate the call. Let's get over to Chuck in Wisconsin. Chuck, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning.
How you doing? I just wanted to say a few things about coal. I worked in the steel mills in northwest Indiana for like 20-something years.
Okay.
Coal is used to manufacture to make steel. You take iron ore pellets and you take coke, which is coal that's been cooked and processed, and then you mix some other ingredients with it, and that's what makes iron. One of the largest manufacturers and users of coal in the state of Indiana is Eli Lilly. Eli Lilly is a pharmaceutical company.
Sure.
They use it in order to cook the coal to remove the materials out of it. The benzene, naphthalene, xylene, all the different materials, which eventually all end up being distilled and refined and broken down into medicine, as simple as aspirin.
Huh.
So you need coal. And what was happening is the coal that was being brought in from other countries or whatever was not as high a quality. So if you were going to compare it to making like whiskey, for example, you never really had the product to make the whiskey. The whiskey was going to be bad as opposed to whiskey.
God knows, so, Chuck, if this were about whiskey, we'd demand that it was the best quality, wouldn't we? We wouldn't be shutting down any whiskey plants.
Yeah, anyway, but you have to have coal to make steel. And if you don't have, and if you want to manufacture and you want to make cars and other steel products, you have to have coal. So it's very important.
Okay.
I just wanted to say that.
And I appreciate that, but President Trump was mostly talking about our energy needs. And we're going to burn clean coal. And that's where I imagine, I'm guessing if we didn't use coal at all for energy and only used it for medicine and manufacturing of steel, things like that. But he's talking about we got to open up new plants. We have plants that make coal. I've never heard of a shortage for Detroit because there's not enough coal. I'm guessing that we haven't shut that down, have we?
Yeah, at one time, Henry Ford, he actually made his own steel mill. It was called Rouge Steel, and he had his own steel manufacturing place because he did not want to pay the money for the steel from like your Inland Steel where I used to work, or U.S. Steel, Bethlehem, all those different steel mills and everything. It was very important that they had steel. When they do have a coal-fired generator, they have what's called a scrubber, and that is what you see that comes out of the big smokestacks. It's not coal, and it's not steam. That's actually been cleaned and scrubbed to where all it is basically like a steam. That's not a environmentally dirty thing. The big retention pond areas, that the runoff from the scrubbers that clean the coal fired generators, that there gets hauled away and they do things with that. But it's not like a huge emission. Anyway, I'm not like an engineer or anything like that. I've been in that industry. I was in the coke plant. I was in the blast furnace, and you know, it's very well regulated.
Well, it is for now, right? Chuck, what's your feelings on coal, though? Do you feel that coal should be opened up for more energy use? Because that's what President Trump is proposing, that he wants to put the coal miners back to work, and we're going to grow at a rate that we need every energy source possible. We need to use coal for energy.
I think it might be a good idea. Now, I don't want you to shoot me when I say this, if you want to have people and you want them to go to work, back when they built the nuclear power plant in Illinois down by wherever it was,
Braidwood, right?
Yeah, down there at Braidwood, right? I had a friend there. His father worked there. He worked there. He said there was over 30,000 people there working per day building that thing. And that was there fabricating and building it. That wasn't all the offset places where they were manufacturing the pipe and everything else. And once again, all that pipe and all that steel beams and everything else, you need coal to make that. But you want to put people to work, make a nuclear power plant.
Now that's a whole other night for us, isn't it, Chuck?
Yes, it is. Anyway, I love your show.
Hey, I appreciate you calling in. Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate it. 312-981-7200. Raj, did I just blow right by the news? What am I, Patty over here?
Yes. No, you're not.
Hello, everybody. Hi. All right. It's 3:36 in the morning. I'm sorry, but I wanted to let him get in because he'd called.
This is all good stuff.
It's interesting. You
know, I'm learning a lot listening to it.
Me too.
Especially the stuff about here when he was talking about coal being used to make steel, but then the U.S. goes around and starts importing steel.
Well,
from
here's
Asia.
What I'm going to say, because I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know anything here, but I'm going to say this. We're importing steel from Asia because U.S. steel is expensive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's because we don't have enough coal production. Now, I have no idea if that's the truth, because I've never heard of we need more coal because of steel. I'm hearing we need to put the coal miners back to work because we need to use it for energy. And Trump cited that in the speech. He says if it was only 1% growth, that's fine. We can make enough, but we're going to grow at 3-4%. We're going to need every energy source we need to avoid rolling brownouts and blackouts. So he's advocating coal for energy. And I don't think that's so. I'm guessing I've never heard of a shortage. I never heard of Eli Lilly saying not enough coal to make your aspirin. Now, maybe there is that much of a shortage. I don't know. But but I do know that we hear a lot of bad things about coal. It pollutes the air in general. It decimates the land to get it. And let's face it, who's ever talked about what a great life a coal miner has? Now, I know there's areas of the country where that's the work that they have, and that's the education level they have and the jobs they can get, and you don't want those people to just be stuck and out of work. But if we're talking about the future, we don't want to raise people to say, hey, there'll be a good coal mining job for you down the road, because those aren't great jobs.
Yeah.
Is at least what I've always heard. It's a job, and that's a job that you are proud of and you work hard at, but it sounds like a very rough, that's not where we're taking the country in general, right? We're talking high-tech solar and wind and advancements that will help not only open up new markets, but clean the earth. So we need to, I would think, move more towards that. But his promises were manufacturing coal, things like that. He's trying to deliver on those promises. You got to give him that. All right, it's getting really late. Let's get upstairs, check the news. Here's Roger. Everybody, Matt Babal here with you, 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. The Cubbies you just mentioned, Raj, that the Cubbies won on Friday.
Yeah.
Dexter Fowler got his World Series ring.
Yep.
And then he let off the game with a home run. The stinker.
Just want to smack him upside
down. Man. Colleen hates that we lost Dexter Fowler.
Yeah.
And that he went to the hated Cardinals. She doesn't like that as well.
Yeah, but we beat him. So.
We did.
For a game, though. Man, I cannot believe we lost six straight.
Jeez. I know, but they won today. They won Friday, right?
Yeah, but still. You go out west, you play the Padres. Please, take 2 out of 3.
Yeah.
Man.
But you know what? It's a long season.
I know. Don't remind me. I'm a long-suffering Cubs fan.
Roger, they won the World Series. Didn't you hear?
That was last year.
You're not suffering anymore. There's no suffering.
That was last year.
By the way, let me just mention it real quick. We'll talk more about Paris and treaties and things like that.
Okay.
Twin Peaks. I've talked a little bit about Twin Peaks.
Oh, that's right.
And I'm not going to do this every week. I could talk about it for an hour every single week, but I know none of you are watching it. Maybe a couple of you, but mostly none of you are. It's been really good. And so 2 weeks ago, they had the first two episodes. Last week, they released. And actually, if you subscribe to Showtime, you could have watched the next two episodes online right after the first two.
Mm-hmm.
But the next two aired over the Memorial Day weekend. And now I think it's going to be 1 hour a week from now on.
Okay.
But so we get home from the tournament in Iowa on Monday night. And so we watch these two episodes. And Colleen put up with the first two. And she liked Twin Peaks, the series and the movie, relatively.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't go for much too crazy, and David Lynch, you know, gets out there.
Right.
Third episode, she's looking at me going, what the hell is this? And she's just like, what the hell is going on? What are you watching? And I was like, I love it. She's like, what do you mean you love it? This makes no sense. This is stupid. And I said, I know, but it's good. She's looking at me like I got a hole in my head.
Why are you making her watch it with you?
Because
we family
like to,
time.
You know, that we like to watch things together. I only get so much control of the remote.
Mm-hmm.
She's there. Generally, I feel like she'll just fall asleep. It'll be fine. You know, I'll get to keep watching. But she stayed awake pretty disgusted throughout most of episode three, which was, let me tell you, it was out there.
Really?
It was out there. I was like watching like, what? I was thinking the same thing. But I enjoy that. I'm fine with that. I'm fine with not having any idea what the hell is going on and just going along for the ride and seeing what this is.
Yeah.
But it is interesting. And if you love the original series and you think you're going to go back and just revisit everybody from the original series, we're seeing people from the original series, but in just tiny little bits, except for Dale Cooper. Agent Dale Cooper, this is really about.
Mm-hmm.
And there's other side stories, but they all seem to relate to Agent Dale Cooper in some way. And when you think about the old characters that were the side plots on the regular show, they've kind of started checking in with them, but they're not part of the main plot, so it seems like they're just there. So far, it seems like they're there for nostalgia and maybe nothing else.
Right.
But it's been fun. So if you ever get a chance, Raj, to watch it, go back and binge, and then you can watch this. I'm telling you.
I have gone back. I started to watch a couple of weeks ago the first episode, the original series.
Yeah.
And I started liking a lot of it, and then, man, as it started going through the investigation, I'm like, what did I see in the original when it was originally broadcast? Because loved when it first aired. You know, the first year of episodes were intriguing. It wasn't anything like that on TV at the time. And now I'm watching, I'm going, what the heck? I kind of like your wife. What the heck is going on?
You said that about the original episodes?
The what? The original? Yeah. And I'm stuck on the just ending the first one. It's taken me several weeks.
The first episode?
Yes.
Is too strange?
Yes.
What happens in the first episode?
I don't know. I'm older now. I don't know.
Is there a dream sequence?
No, it's just
then?
The way the... what's his name?
Agent Cooper?
Yeah, the way he plays.
He doesn't even come until about halfway through the episode.
I know, but it just talking into the stupid...
His memo recorder. He has to tell Diane. And
I'm sorry, but you never see him mail the tape or play the thing over the phone.
Oh, my God. Are you serious? When's the last time you saw somebody go to the bathroom in a show?
I know.
It doesn't happen.
I have problems with that, too. I'm really getting picky in my old age.
No
kidding. Never used to bother me before.
Well, the new episodes move a lot faster. There are some really drawn-out shots and things like that, but it's a lot more. Did you watch True Detective at all?
No, never did. No.
There were a couple episodes of that or a couple series of that, like short series on HBO, modern-day detective stories. It's very, I don't know, it's not as quirky as the original Twin Peaks was. Okay. It's also... violent. It's also hard-edged. It's just very interesting. It goes mm-hmm. a lot of different places. So if you're willing to get into it, I might start doing a separate Twin Peaks podcast next week.
Ooh.
Just for people that really like the show and are watching it, because there's so much to talk about and try to figure out.
How many episodes a week come out?
They did two the first 2 weeks, and now I believe it's just going to be 1 hour each week after that.
Okay.
So it's supposed to go through, I think.
I'll try to get it into it. I mean, yeah, I've started picking up books again.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. Don't sound like you're ashamed.
No, I'm not ashamed.
It's a good thing.
I never thought because I used to fall asleep reading books. I don't know why. It's just my eyesight or something.
Yeah.
And I've been reading two books at the same time this past couple of weeks, believe it or not. Rick Kogan gave me a book.
Rick, and, Roger, I've got this amazing writer. I don't know how they do it. It's an amazing writer. And I got a book here.
You might like it, actually. It takes place in Chicago. It's about a radio station and a newscaster who uncovers a mystery.
Ooh, and tries.
Yeah, very good. I just finished it. And believe it or not, even though I've seen the movies 10 billion times, mm-hmm. I'm starting to actually read Harry Potter.
Really?
Our daughter has the full set.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got book number one. I'm almost done with it.
That's interesting. I never read, and Jack was about the age when he was growing up when Harry Potter really became popular.
Mm-hmm.
And I always tried him to get to read those books, and he had no interest at all. Wouldn't pick them up. None of my kids have read a Harry Potter book.
Yeah,
there's such a generation of kids mm-hmm. who will look back and say, I fell in love with reading when Harry Potter came out.
Exactly. My God, thousands of kids would be waiting at the bookstores.
Millions.
Yes. And I tried to get our grandgirls to read them, and they're sitting on the shelf. They have no interest either, even though they both love reading.
Yeah.
And so several months ago, I started to read the first one to them, and they're like, 5 minutes into it, they go, oh, bored. Yeah. So I don't know. But the little one is reading Diary of a Wimpy Kid now.
Oh, God, do I love those books. Have you ever read any of those books?
No, no. And they've got a series of films.
Yes, and those are good, too. Yeah. And actually, there's a new film coming out this summer. It's kind of sad because the Wimpy Kid is all grown up in real life. They had to recast.
Oh, no.
So there's new people playing the characters because we loved. There were, like, I think three of the movies so far. And we've loved them, and the books are hilarious. Colleen used to wait because the kids at school and the book club
mm-hmm.
and mm-hmm. Scholastic books, they still do that.
Yeah.
And we would always order a book, and whenever that was coming out, we'd order that book, and Colleen would read it first before all the kids. She'd sit there with it every night reading it. And I remember there was this great piece of the book. Do you remember the old Shel Silverstein books where the sidewalk ends?
Yes.
And things like that.
Yeah.
So the Wimpy Kid books are kind of written on loose leaf paper. It looks like loose leaf paper. It's sort of
like a diary type of.
Yeah, it's sort of a diary, and he does drawings in it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're stick figure drawings. And so in the book, he's talking about how his little brother gets away with everything. This little mm-hmm. baby jumps out of the crib, does whatever. You know, if I ever got a, when jumps out of the crib, comes downstairs, they let the baby change the channel, whatever he wants to watch. He's like, when I was a baby, if I came out of the crib, my dad would threaten me, he'd show me the back jacket of the Shel Silverstein book, because there was this photo I remember. I don't know if it's Where the Sidewalk Ends or one of the other ones, of him like sitting on a back patio barefoot, which always freaked me out. And he's got these kind of big eyes. He looked like he was going to kill somebody. He just had that look. And so they show this drawing of him holding, dad's holding up the Shel Silverstein book saying, he's out in the hallway. If you get out of that bed, he's going to kill you. And I was crying when I saw that because I used to be freaked out by that picture of Shel Silverstein too. He looked like a madman on the back of those books.
Yeah, that's funny.
But those were good books.
Wow. Yeah, so that's what we're doing. So I don't have that much time for TV. I get in my Doctor Who every week.
Still haven't watched an episode of that.
Well, see, now we got to do some work here, you and I. That's why we got to get together more often.
But you're too busy. There's a lot we're behind on.
I know.
Well, talk to me after Twin Peaks is over. Then I can.
Okay.
Then
all
I can
right. Fine.
All right. 312-981-7200. I got to take a break. Julia McFarlane, our friend from the BBC, will be on live with us after the 4 o'clock news.
Covfefe.
C-O-V-F-E-F-E.
Read that again.
Despite the constant negative press, covfefe.
I think we've all said that. You know, we've regretted saying it, where you get really upset and you yell covfefe. Maybe you say it under your breath. But we've all at one time or another thought covfefe or let one fly.
Yeah.
Steve Cochran uses words.
I've yelled it at Starbucks.
Have you?
Yes.
I know you used it on one of your cups at one point. Covfefe.
Weekday morning, 6 to 10 on 720 WGN.
Hi, this is John Williams.
And I'm Steve Cochran. You look, when it comes to selling your home, there's only one agent John and I recommend.
And that's Amy Kite of Keller Williams Realty Infinity. Grab a pencil or pull over. We'll tell you how to reach her in less than a minute.
Here's the deal. You need an experienced and effective agent who can expose your home to the most buyers with a tailored marketing and offer strategy. Amy will negotiate you the most money possible for your property.
And get this. If your home doesn't sell at the price and deadline that you agree to, she can rent it, she'll lease it, or she'll buy it for cash.
Does she really do this? She would, but the truth is, she can't hold on to these properties.
And that's because Amy's marketing reaches millions of potential buyers, local, relocating, and international buyers.
If you want your home sold, call the only agent John and I would hire. That's Amy Kite, 847-877-9881. That's 847-877-9881.
Or go online to amywillsellyourhome.com and start packing.
Are you a taxpayer deep in debt to the IRS? If so, then listen carefully to this special public announcement. Due to consumers facing difficulty in the ongoing U.S. economic downturn, the Internal Revenue Service is now accepting reduced settlements from individuals who owe back taxes. Participation in special initiatives by the IRS can reduce your payments by thousands of dollars. A special hotline has been established by National Tax Credit Group to enroll suffering citizens during this crisis. Call the Special Service Hotline to see if you qualify for this historic relief opportunity during the ongoing economic downturn. Take down this number or store it in your cell phone. 800-519-6164. If you owe back taxes to the IRS, you may now qualify for substantial relief. The IRS is now accepting reduced settlements, resulting in some tax debts being reduced by thousands of dollars. To see if you qualify for your reduction, call this new Special Service Hotline now. 800-519-6164. 800-519-6164. That's 1-800-519-6164.
Are you upright and early this morning? Well, I guess yes, you are, aren't you? You're listening to the radio because maybe because you're having trouble sleeping. It just might be that flat, worn-out pillow you've been sleeping on for years. So it's time for you to try a MyPillow and join the millions of people who are getting the best sleep of their lives. You could try one absolutely risk-free. Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-299-9579. MyPillow is offering their signature four-pack special at 50% off. Just use promo code WGN at checkout for 50% off their four-pack special. They'll even throw in free shipping. On top of a 10-year warranty, MyPillow is so confident you'll love your new pillow, they'll give you a 60-night money-back guarantee. Sleep on it. If you don't believe it's the absolute best pillow out there, return it for a full refund. Try MyPillow and see why customers have described them as life-changing. Call 800-299-9579 or log on to MyPillow.com. Use promo code WGN. All right, after the news, Julia McFarlane from the BBC will jump on the phone with us, and we'll chat about what do we have going on over there, Raj. We've got Pippa got married.
Right.
They've got a big election still coming up.
Brexit.
They're Brexiting.
Yeah.
And you know what's interesting? I want to ask Julia about how they feel about this. When Angela Merkel made her big speech this
Angela.
Week. Angela.
Yeah.
Here she'd be Angela, though, right?
Yeah.
Okay. When Angela Merkel made her big speech saying, you know what? Europe has to go on their own. We can't rely on the U.S. anymore. She also lumped Britain into that a little bit, right? Because of Brexit.
A little bit. Yeah, because they're pulling away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I wonder, I'll ask Julia how they feel over there about kind of getting lumped in with these renegades who are pulling out of Paris. It's an interesting time in the world. Interesting time in the world. So what else is going on over there? Anything else you're going to ask about? Oh, well, they had the terrorist attack, too, at the Ariana Grande
concert. Yeah, in fact, a big concert going on. I got it in the news. Ariana Grande putting on
a benefit
concert. She's over there now.
Oh, they're doing it already?
Well, she's there, and she's meeting with some of the survivors of the original blast.
Attack.
Yeah.
I do feel bad. Listen, I feel terrible for all of the people that were injured in that, and, mm-hmm. and everybody. It's terrible. I do feel bad for Ariana Grande. That has to be a terrible burden mm-hmm. for a performer to have been part of that, just like the band that was in Paris when that attack happened.
That's right.
Death Metal Eagles or mm-hmm. Screaming Eagles of Death Metal, whatever the band's name was. What a terrible burden to have been the person that brought all these people here where this happens. That has to weigh on the performer mm-hmm. terribly, I would think. So good for her that she's out there trying to help out. Okay, news is next, 720 WGN. Matt Bubala here with you, 720 WGN. Morning, everybody. Orion's coming up, or Max, possibly, with the morning show in an hour. We're live in the Allstate Showcase studio here on the Magnificent Mile in the Tribune Tower. Joining us on the line right now from overseas in London is our friend Julia McFarlane from the BBC. Hey, Julie, how are you this morning?
Hi, Matt. I'm great. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much for jumping on the phone with us. Lots of stuff going on in both of our countries these days. I know that I follow you and a bunch of your friends on Twitter, and I see a lot about your election. When is your election coming up?
So our election is, polls will open this Thursday. So we are in the final days of the campaign, and it's been an interesting campaign. It's been a lot of twists and turns. It's been a campaign that no one was expecting to happen this year at all. So it's been an interesting few months.
This is fascinating because this is so not how it works here. Not only do you guys just say, hey, you know what? We're going to have an election. I'm calling for an election. Let's have an election. Everybody has to go, all right, here we go. But it was just like a couple of months ago that that happened, wasn't it?
Yeah. And it's interesting because obviously last year we followed your elections over in the US very closely. And at the same time, last year when we were getting ready to have our EU referendum, when the UK voted to leave, we all of a sudden had, our prime minister standing down, a whole tumultuous set of events, a leadership contest for the incumbent government, all wrapped up in a matter of weeks. And a lot of my American friends were thinking, it takes us so long to elect a president. How do you guys do it so quickly? So it's funny when you compare and contrast.
It is interesting. And I wonder if for the media companies over there, because I'll tell you what, it was a boon for all the television and radio stations here because an insane amount of money is spent on advertising when we have, especially these insanely long, dragged out campaigns. And for a state like Iowa here in the U.S., Iowa has the first in the nation primary. So these mm-hmm. candidates spend all this time in Iowa, which otherwise would be a really overlooked state mm-hmm. as far as an election goes. And all this money is spent there. And so every 2 to 4 years, we have a very boom bust cycle for a lot of organizations because of the money that's spent on advertising.
It's funny you should say that. And I would highly recommend an article written by our media editor, the BBC's media editor called Amal Rajan. And he did a piece on how Trump, despite a lot of his conflicts with the press, may just in fact be the savior of a lot of the media.
And how
the Trump presidency has, has sort of helped save, dying print industries, have brought newspapers up to, some of their strongest game in years. And so that was a really great article. So I'd encourage you to have a look at that.
Yeah, I will. And it's true that, newspapers, the print newspapers are dying terribly here in the U.S. And there is a very big campaign right now with the New York Times and others to say now's the time to buy a newspaper because you need to invest in investigative journalism and quality journalism. And so I'm sure Donald Trump isn't happy to know that he's helping the newspaper industry because he's pretty mad at all of them. But I think he is helping a renewed interest in quality journalism and investigative journalism. Definitely. It's been an interesting time over here, to say the least. And, Julie, I want to point out, so you just sent out a nice little tweet saying, hey, I'm going to be on WGN Radio. Anybody in Chicago, wake up and pay attention. And you sent a little gif of Jimmy Fallon waving, saying good morning. And that's another thing that's been very interesting. Jimmy Fallon took over The Tonight Show a couple years ago, and he has been killing it, it here in the ratings because it's very funny and very gamey. He's not real big on the interviews, but he's having a lot of fun, wacky stuff with his guests. And Stephen Colbert who had a show called The Colbert Report, where he was a mock right-wing guy that was mm-hmm. making fun of the right wing here in the States. And then he took over for David Letterman, and he was really struggling. And then Trump came. And now I believe Colbert is actually beating Jimmy Fallon in the ratings, at least in some demos. It's totally saved his show. Oh, it's fascinating to see. And MSNBC and Rachel Maddow, who are considered on the left here, their ratings have really increased a lot because of, you know, all the angst that has been generated by this presidency and for the people who are upset about it. So it's been a very interesting time in the media here in the U.S., that's for sure.
For sure.
Okay, so tell us what's going on over there. Well, let me ask you first. What's mm-hmm. the reaction been in the U.K. to the U.S. pulling out of the Paris Accord?
I think it is part of our sort of recognizing that President Trump is a new type of president. He is certainly not conventional. He is doing things his own way. And while a lot of while a few of his campaign pledges have not yet sort of been fulfilled, his big campaign to repeal and replace Obamacare and a lot of other things, his pledges to pull the US out of the Paris Climate Accord is one of the things that he said he would do, and lo and behold, he has said he's going to do this. So he has been very clear about the fact that he wants to, you know, he wants to change America, he wants to take it into a different direction. So I think while there was a lot of surprise and shock from this side of the pond when that announcement came through, I think probably we should have been expecting Trump to make good on what he said. I mean, on this side of the pond, we have seen a lot of criticism of Theresa May for not signing the agreement along with several European governments, sort of reaffirming their commitment and expressing disappointment in the US in pulling out. Now, Theresa May has said that the UK still is part of the Paris Accord, we still support it, and she said that she had conveyed her disappointment to the president in a personal phone call. She actually said the reason why she did not sign that letter along with Merkel and Macron was because she had already had the conversation with President Trump and she felt she didn't need to.
Do you buy that?
I think Theresa May is in a difficult position.
Because she's running for election,
right? No, not because of that, but because, well, I mean, obviously because of that. I mean, it's always difficult and when you are sort of 4 or 5 days running a campaign. But she is in the position where she is the incumbent prime minister and she has been tasked with taking this country out of Europe. And she is going to have to juggle all sorts of things. She's got some very tough negotiations going ahead of her. Trade and the economy is all at stake. And the United States, as one of our closest ally, we like to think that the feeling is mutual, the special relationship that we've got going.
Well, it depends on the day of the week these days, Julie. You never know what you're going to get. And you're right. If she would have come out and saying we're very upset, then you never know.
Well, she did say that she was disappointed. She said that she had told the president that she was disappointed with his decision. But she has got to tread a line here. The U.S. is an incredibly important strategic, trade partner, cultural partner for the U.K. And as controversial and divisive as President Trump is, although the relationship between two countries goes beyond the state leaders, she still has to work with President Trump. And they have talked to each other a lot. I believe that Theresa May was one of the first people that head of government that President Trump had telephoned after he won the election and after the inauguration. He's due to visit the UK on a visit later this year, although we don't know when that's going to happen. So, you know, when anything that is to do with Europe and the U.S. Britain has a difficult line to tread, sure, because obviously we have our own domestic policy, which is the UK supports the Paris Climate Accord. The UK, the British government is taking steps to try and mitigate sort of climate change here, here and there, particularly with London being, you know, have pollution is a huge problem with, you know, with London, and that a lot of the Conservative Party, they've tried to you know, put a lot of green focus on their policies. A lot more back when David Cameron, the former Prime Minister, he tried to mark himself as a green, a very sort of green, eco-friendly politician. But and so this is difficult because she's got to, you know, she's got to reflect, you know, policies and key issues that we feel strongly about here in the UK. But we've also got to not, you know, not sabotage our relationship, sure, with the President of the United States, which is going to be a key critical ally in the years ahead.
Does she worry at all, though, that by not standing with those European leaders, because she has a delicate thing going on there, too, or somebody's going to if she doesn't get reelected, is how this deal to exit the European Union works out. So I imagine there was also some, okay, if I sign this thing, then I got Trump is all mad at me. But if I don't do this, then maybe these guys are like, well, you know, you got the whole Brexit thing. We're going to make it hard on you. Do you think that she faces pressure from European allies to appease them as well?
I'm not sure, honestly, how the politics of the Paris Climate Accord is going to impact Brexit. I mean, that's not we discussed it a lot. A lot of people were talking about it when President Trump announced he was pulling out of it. But it's more in the final few days of the campaign. We are still more sort of grappling with domestic politics,
sure,
with sort of Brexit, what's going to happen. People's main priorities are we going to have a trade deal? What are they going to be, tariffs? What are the barriers going to be? And a lot of people will be wondering, what about immigration? People will be wondering, will immigration continue to rise? Or will I still be able to attract the talent and the workers that I need? And, you know, from the continent, that, you know, in order to keep my business afloat. So there's people on both sides of debates of various different issues. And so I think we are more sort of focusing on that on the last few days of the campaign.
How are things looking? I know you can't always trust the polls, as we learned here in the U.S. in the last election. But is there any real threat that Theresa May does not get reelected?
I don't know that there are many people who are saying that. It's interesting because in the last few weeks there have been a shift in a lot of the polls. I don't really want to quote any polls, just because I think we should be quite skeptical of polls. They were all so wrong last year. Mm-hmm. They were some of them were very wrong in the Scottish referendum. A lot of the polls were wrong in the 2015 general election, and of course a lot of the polls were wrong last year in the EU referendum. But what has been interesting is that this campaign, this general election campaign period, opened with Theresa May riding on a huge high, and the tabloids would splash every day on how, you know, how she had such a commanding lead of the polls, how soon after she announced that we were going to go to the polls again in general election, that it was going to be a Conservative wipeout. It was going to be of historic magnitudes, and they were expecting sort of a clean sweep across the board. What's happened in the last week is one of the main polling companies in the UK called YouGov, they have come out with this new model that they say they have tried to address some of the issues and some of the inaccuracies from the polls last year and the previous years, and they've tried to get a more accurate reading of how they think the country would vote if the country were to go to the polls on the day that their findings were published. So I think it was maybe Tuesday or Wednesday of last week. I can't remember when, but they came out with a result that was starkly different from a lot of the polls. We've had polls before estimating that the Tories were on a 15 to even 20 point lead, and that was huge news earlier on in the campaign, whereas this new YouGov model, this new YouGov poll, put the lead much, much narrower. In fact, put the Conservative lead narrower than it was between David Cameron, who was a Tory Prime Minister in 2015, against Ed Miliband, who was the leader of the opposition. So that was interesting. And soon after that, there have been a few polls that have also shown narrowing leads in the polls. So a lot of pundits and political reporters who I've been following have said, you know, this is known to happen. There is a Tory wobble. We saw this in 2015, where there was a poll or a few polls that were published a fortnight or 3 weeks before the elections where it looked like it was really going down to the wire, some actually putting Labour ahead. And of course, what happened in 2015 was the Conservatives won a slim but a majority nonetheless. So that took a lot of people by surprise. In 2015, we were all expecting a hung parliament. We were expecting there to be another coalition because in 2010, in that general election, that was that resulted in a hung parliament, and the Conservatives and the Liberal Democrats formed a governing coalition. And we were expecting the same thing to happen in 2015. Now, the phrase hung parliament has come back in again. And people again are starting to talk about hung parliaments and what happens if Theresa not only doesn't make the huge majority that we were all expecting her to make a few weeks ago, but not only that, but fails to win outright. And what happens then?
And what would happen then? If she didn't get reelected, how badly would that screw things up as you head into the Brexit negotiations? Will that change things drastically, do you think?
Well, I think we would be in new territory. If Theresa May failed to get elected and we saw, if we saw a Labour majority, a lot of people were saying that's very unlikely, but if we saw a Labour majority government, Labour have set out their position that they are committed to respecting the result of the EU referendum. They will take the UK out of the EU, but they have a very different strategy from the Tories. They have a much more sort of Euro-friendly-esque attitude. They would be open to looking at keeping some of the benefits of EU membership, such as, you know, staying in the single market. Immigration is unclear where Labour stands, because Jeremy Corbyn, when he has discussed this in public, when he's been asked about immigration, he has said that his position is that he is wanting to focus on something called the Workers' Directive. He basically wants to stop the undercutting of wages, which basically means that British jobs, where someone working in a job in the UK is paid, you know, the minimum wage being much higher than that of other countries, the fact that we have an influx of people coming in from across the UK has meant that a lot of companies have been able to lower what they pay people because labour is cheap, because immigration is immigration is on and up. And he says that is exploitation. That's taking advantage. That is undercutting workers. Workers should all be paid, at the minimum rate, and stop the undercutting of wages. And he believes that is a problem. So whether that tackles, the issues with immigration that some people have in this country, that we have a surplus net migration and we have a increasing population every year, remains to be seen.
What's the follow-up been from the Manchester attack? What's being said over there now regarding that? I imagine it's opened up a lot of wounds and probably fostered its way into the politics going on as well, right?
I'm not sure that it has really affected the campaign that much, is my personal opinion. I mean, It was a ghastly thing to happen last week, actually. To be honest, I mean,
of course,
when the first alerts came out, it was quite late at night, and I was coming in on an early morning shift the next day, so I got the BBC News alert on my phone late on Monday, and the first reports were that there had been an explosion of some sorts, or, you know, loud noises or a bang or something at an Ariana Grande concert in Manchester. And there was a lot of confusion. There were people, there were correspondents and journalists who were phoning the police and who talked to people there. So, there were some people who were saying that it was a balloon and a speaker. You know, that it wasn't, everyone was saying, no, don't be silly, it's not a terrorist attack, stop scaremongering, it was something wrong with the speakers. And so I read those reports, and so I thought, you know, it's just a balloon and a speaker, as these reporters are saying. So I went to bed. And then I woke up the next morning, very early in the morning, and I opened my phone, and all that had gone. It was, you know, police were investigating a bombing at Manchester. And that was a shock. And so then, you know, coming into work and sort of having all the resources of the agencies and all the and all the updates coming in. And as the story began to really take shape, it became more and more clear just how serious this was. And what was very, very striking for me, actually, and I think this is sadly just a shape of things to come, is because, I certainly wasn't on social media that much back in the 7/7 bombings, but now when there is something awful that happens, there is the very, very tortuous and painful period where people are desperately trying to find their loved ones. Yeah. And there were so many people who had been virally tweeted pictures of their parents, of their brothers, of their sisters, of their children, saying, I haven't heard from my friend or you know, my dad or my brother. Has anyone seen them? Can anyone help me? Can anyone help me find them? And that really sort of brings it home for a lot of people, because a lot of the initial reactions to seeing someone react to something as ghastly as this, you generally won't really get up and close and hear the words that they say unless you know them. But now with social media, everyone has a front row seat to the anguish that people have when something like this happens. And it was just heartbreaking. And also the fact that this attack happened at a concert that was full of young girls, young boys, having fun, doing nothing wrong, parents collecting their kids, parents coming together to collect their kids. That was one thing that really, really struck me. I mean, there was two of the victims were a mum and a dad who were turning up together to collect their daughter, and which I just thought was so heartbreaking. I mean, when I was a child, if I was away at doing something and my parents picked me up, they would often take it in turns to pick me up. But the fact that these two parents came together to pick up their daughter and were both killed together, I think was just such a heartbreaking thing to try and compute. And I think a lot of us are still honestly sort of failing to compute really what happened and why it did.
And we fail to do that more and more these days. That's the sad thing about it, is there seems to be no end in sight and no real plan for how we're going to change the world so that these things don't happen. All right, let's end on a lighter note for a second. You had a royal-ish wedding. Pippa Middleton, right, the sister of the princess, right? Got married last weekend or the weekend before, a couple weeks ago, right?
A few weeks ago, yeah.
So that wasn't a royal wedding, but did it have a bit of a feel of a royal wedding since the royals were there?
It kind of did. Pippa Middleton, she's a bit of a celebrity now.
Pippa here, by the way. We did. When they got married and we discovered Pippa, the U.S. went a little crazy over Pippa.
Do you know, it's funny because I was working on the day of the Pippa Middleton wedding, and it was funny because we have all of our screens up in the newsroom and we have a big CNN screen as well. And I swear CNN was covering Pippa Middleton when we were spending way more time on American politics, which was really hilarious. But
we need
our
distractions here, Julie. You don't understand. We
don't
can't keep
you.
Doing this 24 hours a day.
I don't blame you. It's nice to have something, you know, some nice news once in a while. And everyone can get behind a pseudo-royal-esque wedding.
Yeah, absolutely. So when is Harry going to get hitched? What's going on over there? When are you going to have a real royal wedding?
when Harry gets married, that is just going to be a media bonanza.
I imagine.
I was actually, funny enough, at the University of St. Andrews when the actual royal wedding happened with the Duchess of Cambridge and Prince William. And St. Andrews, I mean, the whole media circus also descended on St. Andrews because that is, of course, where they met, where they first started going out. And the wedding happened when we were all studying for our finals, and, you know, we couldn't get to our tutorials on time because we were blocked by the press.
Oh my gosh.
It was pretty hilarious. I mean, everyone is in love with Meghan Markle. A lot of people have been, you know, is she going to be the one? Is Harry going to pop the question?
Yeah.
Who knows? But if they do, it's going to be huge. It's going to be another circus. CNN is probably going to forget who the president is, and it's going to be a happy. Hopefully, it's going to be a happy occasion. And you know, who's she going to wear? What dress is she going to wear? All those questions. Who knows? Who knows? I think we need some good news.
I think you're right. You know, it's so funny, Julie, because I think that there are times in the world where there's all this silly news like, that's not important. Why are we paying attention to that? Why are we wasting our time on that? We become such a reality TV culture and we care about the Kardashians, blah, blah, blah. And now we're at a time where everything is so serious and there's always so much all the time that we're like, yeah, what's Kim Kardashian doing? Anybody talk about her? Where's Kim's butt? Let's find out about that because we need a break from everything else. Julia McFarlane is a reporter and producer at the BBC. You can follow her on Twitter. She's a great follow on Twitter, at Julia McFarlane. Find her on Twitter, and she's so nice to jump on the show with us once in a while. We'll check back in with you in a couple of weeks or a month or so or right after the election, okay?
Talk to you soon. Yeah,
thank you so much, Julia. Have a great day.
You too. Take care.
Bye. Bye-bye. Julia McFarlane with the BBC. Let's, Raj, what do you think? Want to do some news here?
Well, sure, if you'd like to do it now and
what the heck?
Break in between. And...
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. If that's what you want
to
do.
We're late, so I'm like to get to people on time.
Not that late.
The news. Well, a little bit. You're right. For us, this is not that late.
No.
Not at all.
And if we were in England, never mind.
Well, it's already 10:30 a.m. there.
It'd be really late.
Yeah. Little Red Hot Chili Peppers for you. Chili Peppers coming to town late July, late June. I'm going to see the Chili Peppers. U2's in town this weekend. They're playing two shows. They used to play shows. Now they're playing shows.
Yeah.
They're playing two of those at Soldier Field.
Shows out on the East Coast.
Saturday night and Sunday night. It's the Joshua Tree 30th anniversary tour. They're playing the entire album start to finish. I don't know what they do for encores. I hope that they play some encores as well.
How long is the album? Take about an hour? 45 minutes?
13 songs, 10 songs. It probably doesn't take an hour. So they got to do more, right?
Yeah.
I would hope, because usually they play a good two-hour show at least.
What else are they going to do?
I'm sure they do.
But now here's one of our new songs. Mary Had a Little Lamb.
They're from Ireland.
I'm sorry, I don't do Ireland.
I don't know what that was.
There's an English guy with a really bad upper bite.
I'm glad you didn't do that while Julia was on
Thank
the phone.
You.
She would have reached across the pond and slapped you.
I could have done my old British guy, but we won't do that now.
Okay. Yeah. We'll save that.
Save that for another time and place.
Sounds good. I'm trying to find right now, and Jess is efforting this as well. I want to find so I missed the Indy 500 last weekend because we were playing baseball. We used to go to the Indy 500. I've been about 10 times.
Mm.
It used to be like a little family thing we did.
Mm-hmm.
And then the boys started playing travel baseball. Memorial Day weekend tends to be a big weekend for that, so we haven't been able to go in the last few years. And all while I was growing up and until recently – when you went to the Indy 500, one of the highlights before, and the pre-show, the pre-race stuff is awesome. They have all these old cars driving around. They have Purdue has the world's biggest bass drum, huge bass drum in the back of a pickup truck that there's a guy on each side slamming the mallet against.
Mm-hmm.
Beauty queens, things like that, and marching bands. And
a lot of pageantry.
A flyover, the releasing of all these balloons. It's beautiful. And before the national anthem, they sing Back Home Again in Indiana, a song I never would have known had I not attended the Indy 500. And Jim Nabors, Gomer Pyle, right? Was he Gomer? Yeah, he wasn't Goober. He was Gomer. Gomer Pyle sang back home again in Indiana for many, 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 many years.
Got a great voice.
Which was amazing, because I'm like, wait a minute, that's Gomer? And it was, and he did have a back home again.
Yeah.
He did it really cool and well, and it was kitschy and weird, but it was awesome. That's the Indy 500.
Yeah.
And then I can't, and he retired from doing it, I thought,
well,
a couple of years
anymore.
Ago.
He couldn't sing anymore. 2 years ago.
Illness, and he lives in Hawaii, I think. So I think the travel was kind of, I'm not going to do this anymore. I think he did it by video 1 year, and then he retired from it.
And then last year.
Was it Florence?
Florence,
who did it last year? Because Florence Henderson sang the national anthem many times.
No,
at the
500. Last year was what's his name's a cappella group? Straight No Chaser.
It was Straight No Chaser did it last year.
Yes,
really.
I'm almost sure that's who it was.
That.
Straight No Chaser, and I remember because in another location, I was doing some reports, news reports, and they had a recording of one of their rehearsals, and I kind of edited Jim Nabors with these guys doing the song.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it was spot on. It was great. And now I thought it was fantastic, but the reviews afterwards, from what I read, were not that enthusiastic. And so I thought, well, they'll keep doing it for the next, 20 whatever years. And then I found out this year, no. Someone new was going to do it.
Jim Corneliuson, who sings the national anthem of the Blackhawks games.
Yes.
Who Colleen does not like at all.
Wait, Jim or the Blackhawks?
She likes the Blackhawks, although she doesn't love hockey. She just is driven insane by him singing that national anthem.
Why?
A little over the top for Colleen's taste. And it is a little over the top. I'll give him that. But I enjoy it.
It is,
and if you're in a Hawks game, it's awesome.
You. If you don't get moved by that, especially when he points to the flag and it starts waving in the wind. Oh, my God.
She thinks he's making a little bit about himself more than the country.
No. Pride in America. All right. So he does.
Anywho.
At home, back home in Indiana.
Yeah, and I didn't get to hear it because I was at the tournament and I forgot to TiVo the game, and so I missed it. Did you see it?
I did not see it. I heard it. Who played it? Someone played it last week.
Jess, were we able to find it?
And I heard it, and apparently the reviews were he knocked it out of the park.
Okay, Jess is working on it. We'll take a quick break. Hopefully, we'll get to play that for you next on 720 WGN. We think that Jess has found it, but before we get to that, let's see. We got a call that we need to get to, 312-981-7200. Paxton has called in. Hey, Pax, how are you?
Matt, good morning.
What's going on?
I got to say, you and your news guy there put out some strong radio. I love the Nick Show, but you guys got to get on during the daytime. It was a damn education, I'm telling you. From, talking about the straightening out that whole coal thing and the French Connection and the callers and your comments. I mean, that was better than reading the Smithsonian magazine. It was,
Well, I guess thank you very much, Paxton. I appreciate that. I don't know that I'm going to put on a bumper sticker. It's better than reading Smithsonian magazine.
That is a little wordy.
That's an odd one. Yeah. Well, thanks for listening, buddy. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Must be off.
Have a great weekend. Stay out of trouble. You know, I have to stay out of trouble. I like telling people to stay out of trouble. Because at least I could say, I told them stay out of trouble. Jess, do we have... So I get this text from 815. Jim Cornelius did a great... And it's Cornelius' son. It's not Cornelius. That would be... You're thinking of Don Cornelius, who was the host of... Raj.
Huh? Oh, I'm sorry. You're asking me.
Don Cornelius was the host of
Soul Train.
Jim Cornelius.
From Chicago.
Was he really?
Originally, the show started in Chicago.
Chicago and then left. It's crazy. Hollywood started in Chicago, for
Hollywood. You're right.
Jim Corneliuson did a great job singing back home again in Indiana. He is an Indiana University graduate, so that's where the connection to the song came from. Your host's wife, that would be mine, would probably hate his version of it because he really hung on to the last note for a very long time till he was red in the face. Why is that not surprising? Jess, do we have a little bit of Jim there or all of Jim?
Oh, play the whole thing.
We're trying. We're working on it.
Come on.
the internet. Damn you, internet!
Well, wait a minute. You want me to try? Things work pretty fairly smooth up here. Let me do that thing. And back home. Whoop. It'd be nice if I could type right.
Yeah.
Anna, Jim, it's spelled something like that.
Okay. We're gonna
here we go. I got it. 2017, back home in Indiana. Ready? And I don't know
do
who
it.
Recorded this, but and hopefully there won't be an ad. Yeah, somebody.
Right. Cornelison to perform Cornelius. Back home again in Indiana.
This is somebody recording it right there at the track.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's home video.
How long do you have? How long is this?
We got about another minute 40. Wow.
Blackhawks that up, didn't he? Now, do you think,
wow.
Raj, do you think, Raj, that they said, hey, Jim,
yeah.
can you come down and hold that one note like you do at the Hawks games? Because you think that would work
it.
Well here.
He did it.
Or did he say, this is what you get when you get the Jim Corneliusen back home again?
And I just, I was rushing to grab the first one that was there, but there's actually him...
There's the official version.
There's the official
without
version.
Without the woman, the guy's talking through the whole thing.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Well, I would imagine, because it looks like the other one is like the actual broadcast from ABC.
Yeah.
But I'm laughing at the people
go.
That are just talking.
Here's this one.
No, you're not starting again. Now we can't. Raj, you can't do it again.
He's, you know what? He looks happy to be doing this.
I bet he's. Now, what I want to know is when he does home at the end, he must raise his hand just like he does to the flag. At the
well, but,
game.
I mean, what's he pointing at when if he raises his hand?
The state of Indiana.
Well, all right, it's big state.
Sure.
At the stadium, he's just pointing at one flag.
Yeah, maybe he doesn't. I'm looking through the thing.
They let the balloons go.
Do you think he was wearing the ring? One of the rings?
Yeah, of course he's wearing the ring.
Think so?
Now, here's a close-up of the driver sitting in their cars going, will you hurry up, please?
Yeah. Dude.
And he hits that last note. Are you ready? This is clear. He did get red in the face.
I'm out of breath.
He did not raise his hand, though. He did not raise his hand. And he had a marching band accompanying him.
Yeah, the Purdue marching band, it looks like. That was actually pretty good. But yeah, Colleen would not have liked that, I'm sure. Look at him holding that note.
She a hater.
Oh, goodness me. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. Soundgarden. Matt Bubala here with you, 720 WGN. A couple of minutes, Orion Samuelson will join us live from Arizona to preview what's going on the morning show today. Raj, what do you got planned for the weekend? Anything good? Anything exciting?
You know, my weekends are my work week.
Right. So it's going to go home, sleep, adjust.
Yeah. I might try to get out on the golf course again later this afternoon if I have time. I need to exercise more.
Yeah,
I've been lax in that, and You know, I'm trying to get down below 200. So I'm at 211.
Good for you. We all need more exercise. You're not alone in that. That is for sure.
Sir. And it was a beautiful day yesterday.
Friday was the most beautiful day of 2017 so far, I think.
Yeah. So I played nine. At least it was nine technically on the scorecard. Felt like 109 with my golf game, but yeah, had a good time.
Well, so. It ruins a good walk in the woods, right?
Yeah, it was a beautiful walk, though. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So what if I had to swing the golf club a few times as I threw it through the trees?
A few hundred times?
300 times. Other than that, you know, my weekends are, yeah, I just kind of chill and relax at home and come in here. And I love coming in here on the weekend. I look forward to my weekends.
It is fun to be here over the overnights, isn't it?
Yeah.
And what's interesting is how bright it is now when I leave in the morning. Like it's, it's light outside right now.
Yeah, I got to remember to bring my sunglasses with me. For when I go home.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you're probably driving home in the middle of like some really.
I'm on the drive going north. Yeah. So that sun's bright.
Staring
coming off
right
the lake.
Into it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's 4:57 in the morning. Let's. I'm going to do this. And then we're. Did I just. Oh, there I am. I thought I lost myself for a minute.
I thought you did too.
I didn't hear myself for a second there. I'm wondering if Mr. Orion Samuelson is on the line and live and ready to say hello.
Well, good morning.
Good morning, O. How are you doing, sir?
Doing very well, thank you, here in the desert for just a couple more weeks. Finally, the doctors have given me permission to fly.
Excellent.
And the healing is taking place on the leg bypass surgery, and it's good progress. I'm looking forward to it because, you know, we came out here the 14th of February for a 10-day trip, and we're coming back to the Midwest. We haven't been back since because of the unexpected surgery, but that's behind me now. So
yeah, Jameson's has called, and they're worried. They're like, hey, we need O back here. Let's go. The Anvil Club's upset. I mean, Orin, you got some rounds to make when you get back to town.
Indeed I do, and as a matter of fact, I think we've scheduled dinner at Jameson's the evening we get back, which would be June 13th. And then finally, I'm going to get to Arlington on the 17th because I missed the opening, I missed Derby Day and all of that sort of thing. So we'll get to the racetrack on the 17th and looking forward to it.
Oh, good. Excellent. It'll be good to have you back in town, and I imagine you'll make a visit here as well.